Vaishra Vikatante
Vaishra Vikatante
Darshayan Teva Purusham
Darshayan Teva Purusham
Nagrinimo Vachorajan
Nagrinimo Vachorajan
Aturasya Mamurshata
Aturasya Mamurshata
Shri Bhagavan Vacha
Shri Bhagavan Vacha
Navasaravikatande
Navasaravikatande
Darshiyam Jeva Purusham
Darshiyam Jeva Purusham
Nagrinimavacharajan
Nagrinimavacharajan
Aturasyam Murshita
Aturasyam Murshita
Bhagavan Vacha
Sri Bhagavan Vacha
The Supreme Lord said
Do not, indeed,
Sudaha,
heroes,
Vukatante,
boast
vainly,
Dasyanti,
they show,
Eva,
simply,
Purusham,
their prowess, Nagrini Maha,
we do not accept.
Vachaha, the words,
Rajan,
O King, Aturasya,
of one who is mentally agitated,
Mamurushataha, who is about to die. The Supreme Lord said, real heroes do not simply boast, but rather show their prowess in action. We cannot take seriously the words of one who is full of anxiety and who wants to die. Sukadeva Goswami said, just as the wind covers the sun with clouds or a fire with dust, the son of Jara marched toward the two descendants of Maru with his huge assemblage of armies, surrounded them and their soldiers, chariots, flags, horses and charioteers. So as Sridhar Acharya points out, and as Keshav Prabhu would have elaborated on, that the clouds only seem to cover the sun remains shining in the vast sky, nor is the potency of fire affected by a thin covering of dust. Similarly, the covering of Jarasandha's military strength was only apparent. Very important observation there by Sukadeva Goswami at the beginning of this pastime. Supana talad vajja chinnito rata alakshayan chya hariramayo mrujhe striyaha purata lakaham yaha kuparam samashritha samomoho suchardittaha. Text 21. The women stood in the watchtowers, palaces, and high gates of the city. When they could no longer see Krishna's and Balaram's chariots, identified by banners marked with the emblems of Garuda and a palm tree, they were struck with grief and fainted. Purport. The women are especially mentioned here because of their extraordinary attachment to Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram. So, here, this verse is a continuation from the mood of yesterday's verse. And here we see that Krishna is acting as a kshatriya. So, as you see today, he is dressed in royal red and royal blue, true kshatriya spirit. So, because Krishna's father, Krishna was born in a Kshatriya family. Kshatriyas, of course, are the ruling class. They protect the citizens, all the citizens of the country, including all living entities. And sometimes they have to use violence. They are trained in the Kshatriya spirit. They are allowed to go into the forest and hunt, and they practice killing. Generally, they will go into the forest, and especially if there are wild animals which may be terrifying saintly persons, because the saintly persons, the sannyasis, the Vaishnavas, they go into the forest, the vanaprastas and the brahmacharis. They quite often reside in the forest and they don't take any weapons because they're developing their relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and they're learning to depend fully on the Supreme Lord. So they go into the forest, and even though there are, you know, all sorts of wild animals, lions and tigers and bears, they do not care. So, but the Kshatriyas, if there are sometimes certain animals that may pose a threat to those hermitages, the Kshatriyas will go into the forest and they will hunt those animals and kill them. So, in the same way, because you know they have to. They have to practice this art, because the kings previously, if someone was found guilty of something and they would bring the king, the culprit, into the king's palace, and they would say, you know, this person has done this terrible crime. So if he was found guilty, the king would take out his sword, whoosh, off with his head. The king would personally kill him. Not always, but sometimes. So, you know, they had to, you know, because if you're a bit squeamish, or if it's, you know, they would have to, you know, practice killing. And they would have to toughen up so that, you know, the sight of blood and swords cutting through flesh and what have you did not bother them. If their duty had to be done, they would do it. And of course they would also, you know, ride into battle. And of course the Kshatriyas in those days, you know, they were all eager to be the one at the front, you know, leading everyone into the battle. No one wanted to be, you know, sort of fearfully or, you know, hesitantly coming behind. Everyone wanted to charge forward ferociously and fearlessly into battle. So that was the Kshatriya spirit. In the same way, a surgeon also has to learn to use a knife. They also have to learn to cut, because, you know, surgeons, just like one of my daughters, she's becoming a nurse. Not a surgeon, but no doubt she'll have to stick needles in people and all that sort of thing. And you've got to temper yourself to do that, you know. And so, you know, they practice on cadavers. You know, they cut them to... What's that?
Oranges.
Is that what they're called?
They practice
on oranges. Oranges. What about the cadavers? yeah, they practice on...
Both.
Yeah. Eh?
Both.
Oh, we have a doctor. Is there a doctor in the house? We have a doctor. Yes, both. There you go. So when they cut up the oranges, do they have them at quarter time? What's that?
Skin
problems, so they learn to peel an orange. Okay. No. All right. Enough of the frivolities. So they have to practice. So here we see Krishna was born the son of Vasudeva, who was a Kshatriya. So does that mean that Krishna is a Kshatriya? Who says yes? Who says no?
Either.
Both.
He is everything.
He is everything. Well, according to the Bhagavad Gita, although he takes the role of a kshatriya, in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 13th verse, I think it is, he says, although I have created this Varnashram system, I am not within it. So there he actually says, I'm not within any part of the Varnashram. To give an example of that, sometimes the Supreme Lord appears as Matsya avatar, a fish. So that, does that mean that God is a fish? You see, he actually appears through all the different species and, you know, various varnas and ashrams and various incarnations. Generally as a kshatriya. Generally, he's a kshatriya because he specifically teaches the kshatriyas anyway, because the kshatriyas, you know, their responsibility is to make sure that God consciousness is disseminated through their kingdom. But although Krishna appears in various different species of life and various varnas and ashrams, he is actually not within that system. He created them, those different species and varnas and ashrams, but he is actually not. He's transcendental. He's completely transcendental. If we can understand that, according to the Bhagavad Gita, in the same chapter, it says that you become liberated. As Srila Prabhupada sort of puts it in his words, he said, if you can understand, you know, Krishna's transcendental nature, then step forward for liberation. Like that. Everyone, step forward. So, Krishna, he is... So, actually, in the next verse, he describes this a little bit more. He tries to... on the next verse of the Bhagavad Gita, he helps us to understand a little bit more how he is completely transcendental. And there he says that that, you know, within all these three worlds, I do not desire anything. Krishna states that when he performs activities, he is not subject to any reactions. And that, you know, he does not desire anything within the material worlds. So here we see Krishna acting as a kshatriya. You know, there is a big battle, there will be killing, and on the battle of Kurukshetra, Krishna also asks Arjuna to kill, you know, all the opposing armies. But there was no reaction for Krishna. That has to be understood. For us, every single thing we do has a reaction. Even just Srila Prabhupada gave an example that speaking, that he was saying, I am speaking, that is going throughout, that is being recorded in the universe, and there will be a reaction. Of course, Srila Prabhupada's speaking is also being done on behalf of the Supreme Lord, so there is also no reaction. But even if we speak, if we make a sound vibration, it causes a reaction. And we see that, you know, with radio, television, so much advertising, how there is so much, you know, very horrible, negative sound vibration going into the ether. People think it just sort of disappears into thin air, but it doesn't. It all causes a reaction. Every sound. It causes a reaction within the universe and to the person who is vibrating that sound. So, you know, even on a very subtle level, there is reaction. In Kali Yuga, there is a special concession because this age is so degraded, in order for people to be able to get through Kali Yuga, if there is some thought which is not very good, they are not subject to the reaction of that thought. But as soon as it comes into action, even subtly through sound, then there's reaction. So that is a special concession in the age of Kali. Trouble is, you know, when things get into the thought, if we can stop it there, that is the best. That is the best, because then you can stop further reactions at that subtle level, and it's much easier. It's much easier then. But once the reaction begins to manifest physically, it is very, very difficult, almost impossible. It is impossible to actually stop the chain of reactions. So therefore we see, you know, again how Krishna consciousness, keeping a very pure mind, is very important, because that stops the chain of reaction. Because sinful reaction has four different phases. From what we've done in a previous life, there is going to be a reaction, and the first stage of it is unmanifest. So that means we've performed an activity in a previous life and the reaction is just stored up. It's unmanifest. That's called aparabdham. Parabdham is the activity, the karmic activity. Aparabdham is unmanifest. And then the next stage is gutta, which is the seed. So in our next life, that unmanifest reaction begins to manifest as a proclivity, a certain tendency. Just like people say, you know, I've just got this urge to play music, or, you know, I've got to paint, I've got to climb this mountain, you know, I've got it. There's a proclivity there. That is the seed, the reaction is coming. Right? Just like people, you know, struggle up these mountains, they just beat themselves to death going up. Sometimes they never get back down, they beat themselves to death all the way down. But it all began with, you know, this desire, you know, is I will climb that mountain, like that, the proclivity there. So you can see that a lot of suffering, a lot of beating is coming. And then the desire, that is the seed form, and as that seed germinates, bija, the germinating seed, you know, it manifests as a, you know, very strong desire. Yes, I really want to do that. And then parabdham, the actual physical activity manifests. So this is, everyone is subject to that. And in this material world, everyone is subject to those, that cycle of sinful reaction. It just goes round and round and round like that. But Krishna is not. And this is a very important understanding. If Krishna does something, he is not subject to the reaction. Reaction means that the material energy controls that living entity to enforce a series of actions and reactions upon it, upon that person. But Krishna, he is the lord of the material energy. He is in control of the material energy. Material energy is working under his will. There's no way the material energy can, you know, enforce anything on Krishna, because it is his energy and he is fully in control. Apart from that, Krishna is all good. He doesn't do anything which deserves reaction. There's another point. So Krishna doesn't do anything which deserves reaction. On top of that, Krishna has no desire to fulfill in this world. So sometimes we see that Krishna is acting, you know, in a certain way. For instance, later on, the next chapter, I think, chapter 59, I think it is, where you see that Krishna marries 16,108 wives. So sometimes people, you know, if you hear the majority of people when they talk about Krishna, who have no idea about Krishna, they're in complete ignorance, they're not liberated, they're just in a complete illusion, they have no concept of God. And they hear about Krishna, they think, oh, he was a very sensuous person. Krishna, you know, he had a lot of lusty desires. You know, he just surrounded himself with women because he was so lusty and so sensuous like that. That's what people actually say and that's what they think. So, but factually, Krishna has no desires. The actual fact is that every living entity eternally has a relationship with Krishna, and in this material world, those relationships exist also. But they're perverted relationships. So there are 5 direct relationships and 5 indirect relationships. The 5 direct relationships are neutrality. Just like, you know, if we're sitting on the seat, then the seat is offering service in neutrality. There is servitorship, just like someone brought me some water. Thank you. So, very humble, Prabhu. So, that is offering service or, you know, offering friendship as well. That is offering friendship. So there is servitorship, there is friendship, there is parental relationship, and there is conjugal relationship. So these are the 5 direct relationships. And then there are 7 indirect relationships. So the 5 direct relationships, they're eternal and they're permanent. In this world, they manifest pervertedly. And there are 7 indirect relationships, which are also eternal, but in this world they're also manifested indirectly, such as laughter, you know, I may laugh at you, you may laugh at me, at this. Or here we see chivalry. You know, Krishna, you know, there's a very chivalrous pastime. Jarasandha with his mighty armies, you know, coming to Krishna, and Krishna looks like, you know, Jarasandha's army is just so vast, you know, and just you imagine on all directions, you know, people just, you know, if you looked out of the temple and, you know, all the way up to St. Kilda and, you know, all the way out to Brunswick and, you know, this way, as far as you could see, there were people who just wanted to come and kill us, you know. And, you know, in great chivalry, we would pull out our hardy trays and our bells and, you know, defend ourselves. But, you know, chivalry is a particular rasa. For some people, it's not very nice. They don't appreciate it. But for some, they very much appreciate it. You know, they enjoy that. I saw one, as an example of chivalry. There was one in Indonesia, I think it was, when the not sure if it was Indonesia or Fiji, but it was either the Muslims attacking the Christians, or you know, there was some ethnic sort of cleansing going on, and the mobs were just running through the street and just slaughtering the families, you know, men, women, and children, burning down their house, just killing them outright. So one man, there was about 300, a mob of 300 came to his house. So he was one man against 300, and his family were inside, and he knew, you know, that they were going to come in and they were going to kill them. So he got his sword, he went outside, and as the crowd come, he took the head off about the first 3 that come across, and then the crowd just stopped. He got his family and he took off, and they never got him. There's courage and there's chivalry. So, you know, there's a certain flavour in that, a certain taste. So these are relationships. Of course, in the material world, generally these relationships are, you know, they're perverted and they're temporary. They come to an end. You know, no one, we see people like Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali was a, you know, a great fighter, a great warrior. Everyone appreciated the chivalry. You know, very young age, you know, he defeated whoever it was, who was, what's that? Yes, and then someone else after that. That's right, George Foreman, that was the big one. And it was considered an impossible feat. No one in the world considered he would do it. And he actually got into the ring and he let George Foreman, for, you know, pretty much the entire match, just beat him. George Foreman just punching, beating him, because, you know, he knew he really couldn't get through. And then gradually, toward the very end, George Foreman ran out of steam. He'd beaten Ali so hard that he'd just run out of steam, and then Ali just went, damn it, like that. But he was prepared to cop that beating to win. So he won that battle, very serious. But now you see Muhammad Ali, he has Parkinson's disease. So, you know, he can barely, you know, move. My grandfather died of Parkinson's disease. And very debilitating, you know, very sad. They can, you know, they cannot get out of bed. So the chivalry is gone. No one thinks, you know, that is very chivalrous, you know, trying to struggle to get out of bed. So in the material world, you know, it just doesn't last, you know, or, you know, they're all a bit twisted. But in the spiritual world, these relationships exist, and they exist eternally. So Krishna, in this battle, Krishna has no desire to fulfill. It's not, he is not thinking, I've got to be the winner. You know, you get people like that, you know, they just, you ever had a friend like that, even if you're just playing with them, and they just feel, no, I'm going to really beat you, you know, I've got to be. You ever played wrestle with someone like that, and you're just playing, and they're just, you know, when you're not looking, I won, you know. But we're supposed to be friends. I remember when I was a little kid, about five or something, I was playing Chasey, and we're all at a friend's place, Chasey. I hid behind a door, and my name was Danny, and there was this other kid named Denny. You know, it was probably a nice name, but I never quite got used to it, and he never got used to my name. I think there was a, you know, something over the names there. Anyway, I was hiding behind the door, and I saw him through the crack. He came past, and as he walked past, he slammed the door into my face and ran off, and ran to his father. So, you know, then I couldn't say anything, you know. But he's just that mentality, you know. It goes past again. I want to beat this guy, you know. I want to win. I want to be the champion. So, you know, Jarasandha's like that. He has strong, you know, powerful desires. You know, I want to thrash Krishna and beat him. He has, you know, killed Kamsa, the husband of my, you know, daughters. You know, I will show him a lesson. I will get revenge. I will show him this. But Krishna has no desire like that. Krishna is simply performing these pastimes in order to attract us, so that we can actually enjoy perfect relationships with Krishna in the spiritual world. Similarly, Krishna has no need to have, you know, to marry. You know, for instance, in our case, we marry because we are not full in ourselves. We are, you know, to some degree, we, you know, in order to complete ourselves, we take a partner, and then we feel complete. Krishna is not like that. Krishna is described as Purnam, which means that he is full in himself. And Krishna is also described as having unlimited multifarious potencies. And as soon as Krishna, you know, whatever Krishna's will, immediately his various energies, unlimited energies, they immediately fulfill his will, like that. So for him, there is nothing to, you know, unattained. There is nothing incomplete. Everything there, he is completely self-satisfied. He is the very embodiment of bliss. happiness. So for Krishna, there is nothing, you know, that he needs to gain. But because we need to be in relationship with Krishna, we need to have a relationship with the Supreme Lord, therefore he performs all these various pastimes so that we become happy on the transcendental platform. Does everyone understand that concept? Any questions on that concept before I go on? It's quite a... So, so Krishna, he is complete, that he doesn't need to obtain anything because he is full in himself. Srila Prabhupada gives the example, just like a millionaire. Someone who is a millionaire, you know, they do not have desires for $100. You know, a millionaire doesn't, you know, for us who are not millionaires, we're in the opposite. We may desire, oh, I wish I had $100. I wish I had $500, you know, gee, like that. So we may desire like that, but for someone who's a multi-millionaire, just like there's someone in northern Iraq at the moment, and he's a very wealthy person. He's investing $1 billion of his own personal money, developing like a big shopping complex and, you know, all these things. $1 billion, just, you know, he's just taking a gamble. That will be a good place, and, you know, money will come in the future. But, you know, such a person who has $1 billion just to spend, he doesn't have desires for $500 to... See, so Krishna, who exists in the spiritual realm, in his own spiritual kingdom, which is complete and full in itself, he doesn't need to come to the material world to canvass for some wives and some friends and, you know, some more servants and, you know, like that. See, he doesn't have any desires like that. But he is doing that because it is for our benefit. Even ordinary yogis, you see, they have this, what you call, Prapti Siddhi. Srila Prabhupada describes it. There was one yogi called Trilinga Swami. And this was probably about 100 years before Srila Prabhupada was in the West with us. So probably about 130 years ago. And this Trilinga Swami, he would, they saw him sitting naked in the streets. And so, you know, the government men, they came and they said, well, you can't sit here naked. You know, you'll have to go away. We'll arrest you and put you in prison. And, you know, so he didn't go. So they picked him up and they took him and they put him in jail. But because he was a yogi, he just got out, because they can become smaller than the smallest. They can just go under the door. They can fit through the keyhole. You can't, you know, you can't keep them. So this was like, you know, historically, you know, it's like it's only 100 years ago, sort of reported in the, you know, Indian gazettes and what have you. So then they captured him again. Here he is sitting out in the street naked again. Oh, again, you know, how did you get out here? And they put him in jail again. So 3-4 times, every time they catch him and put him in jail, eventually they gave up. They said, really, he's a great yogi. We can never capture him. So, and Srila Prabhupada also tells the story about one of his teachers had a guru, and that guru was also a great yogi. And the teacher was telling Srila Prabhupada that when he was young, he went to see his guru, and his guru said, so what would you like to eat today? And he said, pomegranates. Afghanistan pomegranates. He said that. In the next room, he went in, and there, fresh pomegranates. You could see they've just been plucked off the tree, fresh with the leaves, and, you know, good juicy like that. Just straight there, practice it. So, you know, even for ordinary yogis, they have this ability to achieve, fulfill their desires. Krishna is called Yogisvara, which means that he is the supreme yogi. He is the lord of all mystic powers. He has all mystic powers to unlimited degrees. So Krishna has no particular desire that he needs to come to the material world to fulfill. So it's very important we understand that, because if we understand that Krishna, when he takes birth, in the Kshatriya family, but that does not mean he's actually taken birth, or that he is a Kshatriya or a fish or whatever, what have you. In the same way, if we see the sun rising on the east horizon, we don't think, well, the sun has been born out of the east horizon. You know, we see, look out to the ocean, we see the sun rising through the ocean. Oh, the sun has been born out of the ocean in the east horizon. We don't think like that. We know that the sun existed before that. It has just come into our vision. And when the sun sets, we don't think, oh, now the sun is gone. It disappeared, you know, like that. In the same way, when Krishna appears, he existed before his appearance. He appears, he disappears from our vision, but he is still existing. So if we understand his birth, his transcendental nature, that he has nothing, he is not subject to the reactions of this material world. He is not subject to the laws of this material world. Who can marry 16,108 queens and live with them simultaneously in 16,108 palaces? That defies the laws of nature. That's a person who is not under the laws of nature. Who can defeat these armies? Krishna and Balaram, a couple of little cowherd boys, they defeat these massive armies. You know, it is just, you know, these things are beyond the laws of nature. So Krishna is transcendental. Although he appears to take birth, he does not actually take birth. He is unborn, he is eternal. And he has no desires, he has no purpose to fulfill for his personal self in this material world. His activities are for our benefit. Now, as soon as we understand that, then we are liberated. And a person, as it says in that sloka of the Bhagavad Gita, I think that's 4:14, that one who understands this transcendental truth about Krishna, he also does not become entangled in the cycle of reactions of birth and death in this material world. See? Because if we understand the nature of Krishna, we understand, oh, he's actually God, right? And he's performing these wonderful activities to show us that if we want to have a relationship with a friend, have a relationship with Krishna, he is the best friend. If you want to have a relationship as a servant, let Krishna be the master. He will never cheat you, not like masters in this world. In this world, you get a master, you get a boss, and they want to work you like a dog and give you as little as possible, and cheat you out of all your benefits and royalties and, you know, sick leave and what have they want to, you know, if they could, they would make you work for nothing. They would work you to death if they could get away with it. And when they finish with you, then, oh, bye. No, we don't even get the gold watch anymore. It's, you know, bye, off you go. I'll finish with you. If you get that sort of master, no one wants that sort of master, but that's what this world is like, having that sort of master. But if you want to serve someone, serve Krishna. He will not cheat you. Actually, it describes that, you know, the servant in the spiritual world, it is absolute. That, you know, the servant and the master, they enjoy on an equal platform. They enjoy the kingdom of God on an equal platform. If you want to love, if you want to, you know, have a parental relationship, let Krishna be your child. Just like with Mother Yasoda. Mother Yasoda was, you know, Krishna was her child, and Krishna was always naughty. You know, when he was a little boy, he would be always acting up, playing up. He was always with Mother Yasoda, and he was always causing disturbance. Okay, so you know, this is mothers. In one sense, they enjoy, you know, that the child is always with them, and you know, the little disturbances, they take that as great pleasure. At that, and so Mother Yasoda, she took a stick, you know, I will catch you, and you know, I will use the stick. Of course, she wouldn't ever hit Krishna, but you know, she was like this, trying to stop him. And Krishna was looking at Mother Yasoda with tears in his eyes, very fearful. Like this. So, you know, Krishna, who is feared by fear personified, everyone fears God. Out of fear of God, everyone executes their duties. Right? But here, Krishna, he's fearful of Mother Yasoda. So this is the perfect relationship. You see, Krishna used to, you know, sometimes go next door, and you know, he would pinch the little sleeping babies and make them cry, and you know, drink the milk and drink the yogurt, and you know, he would have, you know, he would grab hold of the cows' tails, and you know, the cows would drag him down in the dust. He would do so many things which, you know, are very, very wonderful to see little children do. So whether one wants Krishna as in any of the different relationships, just like we will read later on, that the queens of Dwarka, they wanted Krishna as their lover. See, and this is the biggest misconception that people think, you know, Krishna had so many girlfriends and so many wives that he was very sensuous. But Krishna is, he has no desire to fulfill, but he is fulfilling their desire. And this is the nature of Krishna consciousness, that by Krishna consciousness, all your heart's desires are perfectly fulfilled unlimitedly. Srila Prabhupada once commented that sometimes we take Krishna consciousness as trifling, which means that, you know, we take Krishna consciousness as, oh, you know, it's a bit troublesome, you know, like, you know, it's a bit difficult, you know, it sort of doesn't fit in with my prospects of earning money, or, you know, my prospects for becoming famous, or, you know, Sanjika, whatever. We sometimes feel the Krishna consciousness process, you know, should I really take to this seriously? It's a, you know, it's a bit difficult, it's a bit disturbing to my material life. But we don't understand that actually Krishna consciousness fulfills all of your heart's desires. Right? Whatever we are searching for in this material world, Krishna is showing us through his pastimes that actually those desires are perfectly fulfilled through Krishna. So that is what these pastimes. So we should not, you know, read these pastimes and think that Krishna is just an ordinary warrior, or that he is, you know, just a lusty boy dancing, you know. We should always keep in mind, whenever we hear any pastime, we should always keep that firmly in mind. Krishna is God, he is transcendental. Although he appears to take birth, he is unborn. He has no desires to fulfill. What he is doing is for the benefit of the devotees, and for the pleasure of the devotees who descend with him, and for the pleasure of the devotees who will go back to the spiritual world. Any pastime we hear, or if we're speaking, you know, telling other people about Krishna's pastimes, they're the things that we have to impress upon them. If we're describing Krishna's pastimes to someone, and we're not making it clear that Krishna is God, that he is transcendental like this, then, you know, we can very easily mislead people. Just like, you know, one time people came to Srila Prabhupada and they wanted to make a film about Krishna. And they wanted to make a film about, you know, and they wanted Prabhupada's blessings. Prabhupada wouldn't give it. He said, no. You know, because everyone will misunderstand. What benefit will your film do? You'll show Krishna dancing with the gopis and doing this and doing that, and everyone will just misunderstand that here is this lusty boy, you know, like that. So he wouldn't give his blessings. And so he was trying to tell them, you know, you make a film to show how Krishna is the source of all the material worlds. And they were saying, oh, well, we'll show Krishna's childhood pastimes. Prabhupada saying, no, not even that. You know, it's like you'll make people misunderstand. And artists would come to Prabhupada, you know, we want to paint this, we want to paint that. And Srila Prabhupada, everyone wants to, you know, paint these pictures of Krishna where they make people misunderstand he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Srila Prabhupada preferred, you know, you paint pictures, you make movies, you write books, whatever, but you must make people understand Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is transcendental to the material nature. He has no desires to fulfill, and all his pastimes are so that his eternal devotees enjoy with him, and we who watch that become attracted to that and then desire to go back home, back to the spiritual world, because that is our constitutional position. Every single one of us has an eternal relationship with Krishna. That is called, and when we realize that eternal relationship, that is called Swarup Siddhi. If we follow the process of Krishna consciousness, you will realize your eternal constitutional form, identity, place, and then you will understand, yes, I have this place reserved for me in the spiritual world, I'm finished with the material world, like that, and then you go back to Godhead. Any questions or comments at all? Yeah. Hello, Hare Krishna. How are you? Yes, you can. Some Charanamrita in the corner there, if you like. Charanamrita. Yeah. Yeah,
please.
Oh, she would have purified herself.
Yeah. She was on the floor. And then, anyway, it was amazing because it was just really strange because I felt washed. You know, even though I was sitting in a dentist chair and I was having the needles stuck in my mouth, you know, it was just amazing, you know, just to see Krishna's face. You know, he's
That's right. Because whenever, you know, as soon as we remember Krishna, then we remember that we are also spiritual by nature, that he is spiritual and we're spiritual by nature. And then even if we're in a situation like that, in a dentist chair or something difficult in the material world, which is basically everywhere, then we tend to transfer ourselves to the Brahman spiritual platform of life very quickly, and even in this material world, you know, we are well situated. Yes.
Taking shelter of fear of what's happening, overtake shelter of transcendence.
Yeah, it's a fact. Any other questions or comments? All glory to Srila Prabhupada.